Let's continue our study. We're going to be looking at chapter 33, verses 1 to 20 on this coming Sunday. And so it begins with this statement. Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and there Esau was coming. With him were 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants, and put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children behind, Rachel and Jehovah. Joseph last. Okay, I'm going to be a mess tonight, I think. So there he is kind of making some of the arrangements. So first, kind of an observational question. In what order did he send them?
Maidservants first.
And then Leah.
And then Rachel.
Okay. Everybody agree with that? So, first we had Zilpah and then Bilhah, but maybe we're not exactly told. Then Leah. And then finally, Rachel. Why? What's the significance of that order?
He put the ones he liked best in the back.
He put the ones he liked best in the back. For why?
Safety.
Normally you'd be thinking in terms of, put the honored ones first and the servants follow up last. And so, but he's protecting the preferred ones last. Who gets the place of honor, if you will? Rachel. So again, that wasn't the first wife, that wasn't the first daughter, that was the one he loved and the one he, so yeah, we see constant preference for her, and that again had to sting Leah that she is not the last. So then verse 3, he crossed over before them, bowed himself to the ground 7 times, until he came near to his brother. Okay, here's a picture of him bowing. So what's he trying to communicate? When Jacob sees Esau, he approaches and bows near to the ground 7 times. What's he trying to communicate?
Humility.
Pardon me?
Humility.
Humility?
Submission.
Looks to me like submission. This is the bowing 7 times to a king was, we have El Armanet tablets that point to that as a custom. So from that time period. So there was actually a little bit later. But anyway, that's not uncommon to bow in submission and respect. Some would argue it's just respect and courtesy, but it could, there's also, I think, a kind of a submission in a sense. Why does he? What's Jacob's relationship to Esau?
Brothers.
Is this the typical way that siblings greet each other?
Faith and Jonathan.
Yeah, is this how siblings greet each other? So why is this greeting this way?
Jacob's afraid.
Yeah. Remember, he's coming with 400 men. Remember, the last he heard, Mom was going to let him know when Esau was cooled down. No word from Mom. Here comes Esau with 400 men. So he sent, remember, the gift of over 550 animals in advance to in a wave after wave, and each followed by servants. And so when he finally shows, now he comes with the greatest of humility. But I will notice, he's been putting all the, they separated all that he had into two groups. In case the front group was attacked, the back group might escape. He sent all these presents. I will notice, and I like this about him, he puts himself in front of his family. So he's taking the risk, I guess they could try to run back over the river, but he doesn't put the family he's not putting himself last He's putting himself in the place of humility and also danger. So that was our question. Now, so Esau's response. Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and children and said, "Who are these?" And he said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Then the maidservants came near, they and their children, and bowed down. Leah also came near with her children. They bowed down. After Joseph and Rachel came near, and they bowed down. So it was quite a response, isn't it? So imagine Esau. He was trembling with fear when he heard that, Jacob was trembling with fear when he heard Esau was coming with 400. Spends that night wrestling with the Lord in prayer. Finally crosses the river to join his family. And all this whole process, here he is. And then Esau starts running at him. What do you think was going through his heart at that time?
What if he's got a knife?
I think I've told you the story before when I worked for veterinarian one time. I fed the animals and this kind of stuff, and I could slide their food tray underneath most of the doors. But one time, I don't know what happened. The door either somehow got unlocked or maybe I opened it. Anyway, one of the dogs got out and was trying through the cage to get to one of the other dogs. The little one that was being attacked was a little terrier. And does anyone here own a terrier? Okay, good. Terriers are not known for brightness. Courage, yes. Brightness, no. The one that was trying to get to him was a pit bull. In fact, we suspected that she was used in dogfighting. She would often come in with fresh wounds, and so she was a killer dog. But all I knew was she was going to kill this other dog, and so I just grabbed her both by the skin of her neck, picked her up, ran into the cage, threw her down, and locked the door behind me so she wouldn't get out. And then I realized I've just locked myself in with a trained killer. And sure enough, she leapt at me. And honestly, my knees actually gave out because I just thought, it's over. And then she started licking my face. So I can relate to Jacob here. He thinks this is it. He's leading the charge. There's 400 men behind him. I am dead. And he throws his arms around him. He's thinking, is this going to be the wrestling? No, it's a hug. And what a scene that must have been as there's weeping and restoration. What does that tell you about Esau?
The Lord changed his heart.
Lord changed his heart. Because last we saw, he was mouthing murder. What changed his heart? The Lord did. So remember how Jacob had been praying and praying. I think here's the answer to the prayer. God's promises. God changed the heart of Esau. We're not told, but I have to suspect if you gather 400 people with you to go meet someone, that sounds like he brought a military force, at least as a backup. And so this is just an amazing transformation. Now, we don't know what his original intentions were, but God changed his heart. And I'm not saying here that Esau's a believer, but God can even change and move the heart of an unbeliever. And familiar to that is the Proverbs. The heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord. He moves it wherever he will. Here is God moving Esau's heart to compassion. What other thoughts as you think about that?
Well, he wept. They weren't tears of sorrow, they were tears of joy.
Yeah.
They couldn't contain themselves.
The joy of restoration and reconciliation. Frankly, there probably had been many a tear of bitterness and anger, but replaced instead with the sweet tears of forgiveness and restoration. As you hear that account, does it remind you of any other biblical accounts? Prodigal son, yeah. Remember how the father ran to him, threw his arms around him, and his nostrils were filled with the smell of the pigsty where his son had been working. But one commentator I read said Luke or the Lord borrowed the language of this account of the offended one running to forgive the offender. So what an incredible account of God's mercy. Okay, one of the questions we ask when we're in the scriptures, we've noticed and observed in the details. We kind of got that figured out when we're interpreting, and especially for applications. One of the questions we ask is, how would this affect, what's the impact, what is this supposed to teach the original audience? So as Moses is recording this, and for that generation that's come out of Egypt and is heading towards the promised land, what's the lesson they're supposed to learn as they're heading towards the promised land?
God is a God of mercy and forgiveness.
God is a God of mercy and forgiveness. Good.
Good.
Okay, and can they, and God, it seems to me too, can move in the hearts of the people they're going to face. You know, he can get raise up mercy when he wants to raise up mercy. He can harden when he wants to harden. But that God is sovereign over hearts, and that God is a God of mercy and grace. Good reminders all the way through. Good. So what else can I say here? Okay, well, let's move on to the next one.
But the question is, why did he bring that many men?
Well, that's where I wonder, did he intend harm to start with?
You mean from Jacob?
Yeah. No, did Esau intend to bring harm to Jacob?
Oh. And then all those gifts he sent before, that must have started Esau thinking about Jacob.
And they all came with these humble thoughts. These are from your servant to our Lord Esau. That may have been part of how God was turning his heart, because he heard all of that. So it's a possibility, you know, because we're not told, right? So we have to be careful about being dogmatic. I think he left with the intent of, here comes Jacob, here's my chance, let's gather our troops. And God moving his heart through the gifts and just through the mercy of God. Another possibility is, rumor has it, here comes Jacob, and he's got lots with him. Maybe he has intentions, and so I'm not going to go unarmed. I'm going to meet him just in case he wants to do something here. You know, it could have been that. Either way, the bitterness and the fearfulness is washed away in forgiveness and tears, and just a sweet testimony of what God can do.
And evidently, the Lord blessed Esau for what he told Joel. Jacob, I have enough.
Yeah, well, and, you know, he had sufficient, yeah. And so Esau says, what do you mean by all this company which I'm in? You know, what is all this stuff you've been sending me? What is all? And he said, these are to find favor in the sight of my Lord. So first thing you might notice, I think it's interesting, he doesn't say, oh, I received your gifts. It's kind of a... He's giving him an out, you know, it's kind of a little reserve here. What is all that about? So the servants have been saved. Maybe you sometimes will, maybe a three-year-old will come and say, can you come to our house for lunch? That's very nice. You kind of wait to see if that was something the parents had in mind or just the three-year-old. You know, were the servants really speaking for you? Maybe part of what, you know, courtesy. What is all this? You know, he's fishing. Jacob, do you want to confirm that? And he said, these are to find favor in the sight of my Lord.
Kind of wonder if it would have turned out differently. You know, I mean, when Jacob left, he left with the blessing, and, you know, Esau in a bad spot. And he'd come back and say, okay, remember, I'm in charge. And, you know, I think the story might have been a little different.
Okay, good point. Had he come in and say, remember how Dad said, you know, you're the older, you're going to serve the younger, I'm the younger, time to serve, It might have.
So there might have been a couple hearts that got changed in between those times?
Yeah. I think you're right. And there's evidence of God moving in both hearts. That Jacob came in with a humble spirit. And that's a good reminder, too. When there is dealing with an offended person, or even one who thinks they're offended, a spirit of humility can go a long way. A gentle answer turns away wrath. And so that humility, that gentleness that he came, the giving of gifts, some of that might be a little... You know, there's Jacob working the angles. If I can give you enough gifts, you can't be mad at me, you know? And so it's, you know, trusting the Lord, but I'm going to go ahead and do what I can at the same time.
I think the Lord is working on Jacob's heart, because even though, you know, he had sent all of those gifts, and he bowed down before him seven times, I think that's Jacob still trying to say, I'm in control. But then when Esau comes in and the Lord has already changed his heart, I think the Lord is trying to teach Jacob, I took care of this for you. This isn't something that you had schemed and worked out. I did this.
Yeah. You know, there's that concept of the limp. This is something, you are weak, I am strong, I do this. I think you're right. And so the Lord is teaching Jacob and Israel that God is so big he can move hearts. And so trust him and give yourself to prayer. Trust him, follow him, and he can do that. That's a good point. I think Jacob, this is a learning time in Jacob's life. Well, Esau says, I have enough, brother. Keep what you have for yourself. You know, I've got enough.
What was the territory like there? Could Esau have called 400 men to make sure that Jacob and his people got safety to where they were going?
Okay, so there's a question. Did they? Was he thinking they need a safe escort?
Was there somebody who would be willing to attack Jacob and all this stuff?
That is a possibility. You know, that's a possibility.
So we don't know when his heart was changed.
Right. It's hard to say. When he says, "Let me leave some men with you," that suggests he doesn't think it takes all 400 to escort them. Hard to be dogmatic. But what's clear is, I think there is a melting of hearts, at least by the time of the embrace. I think that's genuine. Okay, so he says, it's all this. I have enough. And so Jacob said, no, please, if I found favor in your sight, then receive my present from my hand, inasmuch as I've seen your face, as though I'd seen the face of God. And you were pleased with me. What's he saying there?
The relationship's better than the stuff.
Good. Good. The restored relationship is better than the stuff. How does that expression strike you? Inasmuch as I've seen your face... As though I had seen the face of God and you were pleased with me.
Well, he just had that interaction with Peniel. So if you want to continue that, but I've never noticed that. But he just felt like he had a face-to-face encounter with God. And now, so he knows what he's talking about.
Okay, so he has seen the face of God dimly in the dark. And so... That puts some context on, and then he compares seeing Esau to seeing God face to face. Any other reactions to that?
Could be more schmoozing.
Pardon me?
Could be more schmoozing.
A little schmooze, yeah. Getting ready to run for office. I promise you that is the best fried chicken I have ever eaten in my life, he said in every city he visited.
Do you really think that the Holy Spirit is just going to write down God has dealt graciously with me and have that be conniving? It seems like that's genuine to me.
So maybe that's a hyperbole, but genuine. You know, I mean, seeing you is the sweetest thing I could see. Seeing your restored face or something or whatever. In other words,
well, he thinks he's going to die. So, or he thinks all those children and those maidservants and those wives are going to die.
Good point.
And they're not going to die. They're actually warmly welcomed. So I think he really believes all that stuff. I don't see hyperbole, or I don't see conniving.
Okay. So here we have the optimist. Anyway, who's the pessimist that wants to... Yes.
Well, I'm struck by the fact that Jacob keeps mentioning God and Esau doesn't respond in any similar terms. Mm-hmm. It seems like, you know, one guy can hardly open his mouth without referring to God. But regarding him saying, I see your face as it were the face of God, don't we all perceive in our human interactions God moving? And when it's some human interaction that we've really been stressed about, and God does something, it's like, oh, I've seen God move in this. And it's like, you know, when your worst fear is dispelled, you know, it's like the signature of, oh, you know, God really is going to bless me.
So seeing you is like I'm seeing God, not that you're God, but I see God at work.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, see, I'm getting some nods on that.
Seeing you smile is tantamount to realizing, oh, God's smiling on my whole career.
Okay, good. Good. Of course, remember, one of the reasons we do this is to help you learn how to study the Bible. And one of the other major reasons is to help me know what to say on Sunday. Okay? So this is helping me. I've wrestled with this, and you're helping me to get some grasps on it. Good. It's like looking into the face of God to see your helpful. But I think that's a way of expressing it. That as he, especially in the moment of, you've got to get it, he... very much expected they could have all been slaughtered. And his loved ones, himself. And so to see that smiling face, God has smiled. You know, and so it's not demeaning God. It's saying, I see God in what you're doing. Good. So his response is, please take my blessing that's brought to you. My blessing, by the way. Remember? God gave me the blessing. I'm going to give this blessing to you. Because God has dealt graciously with me, because I have enough. And so he urged him, and he did take it. That's also a kind of a cultural thing. If I accept the gift, that's kind of a statement of, we're okay. You know, if he said, I will not take your gift, then, okay, something, we still haven't built the bridge yet. But in that he offers, so often in the covenant, there would be the exchanging of things. You see, for example, remember when the Queen of Sheba brought all those gifts to Solomon, and she went loaded away with gifts. That giving of gifts is we're good. We're in a good relationship. And so that's a big part of this. This would be my joy to give you these, just to express my joy in seeing you. And there we are. And so so there he is saying, please, please take them. Okay. So Esau said, let us take our journey. Let us go, and I'll go before you. Okay, come on with me. And Jacob said to him, my Lord knows that the children are weak. This is, so he's going to basically say, you know, the kids are going to hold me back, right? I see this all the time on Sunday afternoon. Hey, would you like to get together for lunch? Oh, the kids need a nap. Mm-hmm. My children are weak. I can't come with you. And it has nothing to do with the NFL schedule. Nothing. Anyway, my Lord knows that the children are weak. The flocks and herds which are nursing are with me. If a man should drive them hard, one day all the flock will die. You know that. He said, you know the flocks, you know herds. That's true. You know, you just can't drive them as fast as you can drive a bunch of guys on their camels. So, please let my Lord go on ahead before his servant. Can you notice the language here? Honoring, respectful. And I will lead. on slowly at a pace which the livestock that go before me and the children are able to endure until I come to my Lord in Seir. And Esau said, now let me leave with some of you, the people who are with me. But he said, why need is that? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord. And Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. Okay? And so here they are saying goodbye. Well, Jacob journeyed to Sukkot, which means booths. And I think we're right around the time now of the festival of Feast of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, we sometimes call it. I think that's the King James language. Sukkot is the booths. In Israel, among Jews, if they're observant, they will build a little booth. So if you're going through Israel, you'll see like in apartments, they'll go out on their porch and build a little booth that they can stay in to remind them of God's, that they lived in temporary shelters while they were in the wilderness for 40 years. But he calls this, he builds temporary shelters. He journeyed to Sukkot, which is what he's going to name it, but he built himself a house and made booths, Sukkot, for his livestock. Therefore, the name of the place is called Sukkot. Then Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram, and he pitched his tent before the city. Okay, well, now we ask questions. Let's look at the questions, and let's look at our maps. So here's a general map that's helpful. Get it in perspective. Here's the world. Here's the Middle East. You can kind of see they started up in Haran, came down through some of the major cities, Carchemish, Aleppo, Hamath, Damascus. You still hear about that. By the way, here's Lebanon. Here's Turkey up here. So this is, right here is where, you know, some of the issues with the Kurds and all is happening, okay, right now. So we talk about things like, the ancient city of Damascus. You read about Damascus. If you follow the news much within a half a year, surely you'll see the word Damascus.
Yeah, Aleppo's been in the news.
Aleppo's been, yeah. And it's, that was right. There's a very famous ancient Hebrew scroll called the Aleppo document. So, Aleppo Codex. So, anyway, coming down all the way to the Jabbok River, there's Peniel. And there's Sukkot, okay? And then he'll go on to Shechem or Nablus. And I've actually circled those, I guess, on this map here. There's where Sukkot is. There is Shechem. There is Bethel, to kind of put them in perspective. And there is Mount Seir. Do you see it all the way down on the kind of close to the bottom on the right? Here's another map that kind of puts them in perspective. I'll just, make it a little bit easier. Here's the journey down from Haran. Comes down. There's Mizpah. Here's Peniel. There's the Jabbok River, which is this river that goes into the Sea of the River of Jordan. And there's Sukkot there. Shechem there. So we'll take it. He comes. He builds booths and a house in Sukkot. And then he goes to Shechem. And here's where the brother is made, coming from Mount Seir. Okay? Now, if that's too complex, how's this one? From Haran, Mahanaim, Peniel, Sukkot, Edom, Seir, Shechem, Bethel, everything. So, why didn't Jacob follow Esau to Seir? Didn't he say he would?
Yeah.
Someone see that in the printed text? Where does it say it? Read the phrase so I don't have to flip back through four slides.
As I come to my Lord in Seir.
Verse 14.
Okay, verse 14. Okay, read it out. Jim, are you looking at it?
Please let my Lord go on ahead. Before his servant, I will lead on and slowly at a pace which the livestock that go before me and the children are able to endure until I come to my Lord in Seir.
Couldn't be clearer, right? Go ahead, I'll follow you into Seir. And so, Esau comes back towards Seir, heads south. And Jacob heads what direction?
West.
Kind of reminds me of another biblical character.
Johnny Appleseed.
Johnny Appleseed. Jonah. When he's called to Assyria, where does he head? He heads the opposite direction. And he goes to Sukkot. What does he do in Sukkot? The name's your clue. He builds a house. Sheds for the animals. Now these are animals that, you know, can handle the outdoors, right? What does that tell you that he's building booths, sheds, structures for the animals? Yeah. And he's built himself a house. So that's, in other words, he's a tent dweller. So in other words, he isn't just pitching his tent like we often say. He builds himself a house. What does that tell you about a stay in Sukkot? He's staying for a while. This dot is actually accurate, I think. Sukkot is north of the Jabbok River. Remember, he crossed the Jabbok River into Esau's territory, met him, says, "I'll follow you." He crosses back over the Jabbok River out of Esau's territory and heads west and sets up a settlement. He's not just saying, "I'm moving slow." He's establishing himself.
So is he moving into the territory that was promised?
Not in Sukkot.
Not yet.
Yeah. Why did he stay in Sukkot?
Put some distance between you.
Well, it surely is. Yeah, it's allowing Esau to go ahead and build some distance. Okay, so you might argue, you could argue, by the way, that, you know, maybe he, while they were staying in Sukkot, he went down and saw his brother in Seir. What's the problem with that argument? From silence. Nowhere does it say it. Why is he staying in Sukkot? I have a problem with this. But let's ask another question. How long did he stay in Sukkot? Doesn't say. We're going to have run into a difficult situation in the context, not in this week, but coming up, where his daughter, Dinah, will be taken by a man who wants to marry her. How old do we think Dinah must have been?
At least a teenager.
At least a teenager. At this point, she's about 7 years old. How do I know that? She was born, then Joseph was born, different mothers, so pretty close in. He works another 6 years, and then he leaves. So, but by the time he's at Shechem, she's going to be of marriageable age, and she'll be able to go out and be with the other young women, which is older than seven. He spends years in Sukkot. You following what I'm saying here? This is kind of where you're carefully observing some of the details. The question is, why? Okay, since I'm preaching this Sunday, tell me.
That seems to be a fertile land. If you see the delta between the rivers, I think that would have been a really good place for settlement.
Are you a farmer or from family of farmers? That's a very good observation.
What did you say?
He says the John Deere dealership is real close to them. What he was saying is, look, it's right by a river. He's got flocks. This is going to have one of those areas where, especially coming in here, it's going to have kind of the deltas that probably sometimes flood and all that, and that leads to greater fertility of the land. This is probably a very ideal kind of place for taking care of your flocks kind of like reminds us of what Lot said about Sodom. Whoa, wow, look at the water, look at how that lush a territory.
So what? Maybe he gave Esau half his flocks and he stayed there to build it back up again.
So maybe he's rebuilding his flocks, maybe. Here's what bothers me. When God spoke to him and gave him the vision, time to leave, he said, I am the God of Bethel. And so when he says it's time to go back to your land, you know, the last place he was in the land was Bethel. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm going to come back and worship here. He's not in the land. Why, when God says time to go back to the land, why are you parking in Sukkot? For years. You know, I could see maybe we're getting through this is the calving season or whatever, but for years.
Maybe like Ginger said, maybe it was an appealing land, like it's a lot, you know.
That's a really good point. Is that a valid reason? Well, if the command was go home to the land, or is that just the reason? He says, why leave? This is good.
Do you think he didn't want to get mixed up with Esau's tribe?
Well, of course, Esau's down here, and I think that's one reason he's above the river, north of the river. You know, he's out of his territory.
But he's got a daughter, marriageable. You may not want him marrying into Esau's family.
Yeah, that's a good point. He's got at least one daughter. Actually, we line out later others. But he doesn't want her to get mixed up with Esau's crowd. You know, remember, he married Canaanite women. So, but that would be more ground. Get across the river.
So then God can Shechem to move him on down to where he's supposed to go.
Yeah. Well, moving on then. Things to think about. He bought the part. So he went to Shechem. I do have to go back to the text. I'm sorry. Then Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. So after years, by the way, notice that it doesn't tell you that there, but from if you build together the context, that would tell us that. And he pitched his tent before the city, didn't build a house. And he bought a parcel of land where he had pitched his tent from the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. And then he erected an altar there and called it El Elohe Israel. He's still not back at Bethel. That means God, God of Israel. God is the God of Israel, something to that effect. So where did he buy land, build a tent, and build the altar?
Shechem.
And so the question is that a good idea? We're told it's the people of Hamor. It's a Canaanite town. So,
were you saying it's a good idea to buy from Shechem?
Well, to establish yourself, yeah, there. Who else has bought land in the Promised Family?
Abraham.
What kind of land?
Abraham.
Now, this is the first time you're buying land for living as opposed to a burial that we know of. So that's an interesting observation. Give me some general take. Just a couple more minutes and you've seen and your take on this.
It's a land of Canaan, which are Canaanites, not good people to be around.
Yeah, and so that's where you notice, that's one of the things where you tend to notice that Abraham doesn't really get close to cities. So that's problematic, and that we're going to see that really is problematic coming up, not this week.
So maybe he avoided the Esau and the Edomites, but what he chose was even worse.
Yeah, interesting. So he's staying away from his brother, but getting awfully close with the Canaanites. Tell me, how do you think, when he told his brother, I'm going to follow you south, and he heads west and even camps, well, not camps, he settles in Sukkot for years. and then moves west further into the promised land, does that bother you that he said, I'm going to follow you?
Yeah.
So how do you explain that?
So how much of that goodwill did he destroy with that?
Is that a good way to keep the goodwill going with your restored relationship? Yeah. Okay.
Well, his character's coming out, his old character, deceiver.
A little bit of the deceiver might be left in him. Mm-hmm. Is it possible? What is? Let's say he's a believer at this point. He's wrestled with God. God's changed his name. Is it possible for sinful tendencies still to abide in a believer?
Maybe he's like us.
We would all have to say that.
Maybe he's like us. He want God. We want God to get us through the crisis, but then we'll take over after that.
Yeah, he's going back to his old way. I can fix this. Yeah, yeah, I'll be right behind you. West, think, everybody across the river.
Do you think that he knew at the moment he wasn't really going to go? It seems like he didn't think he was going to go because he didn't want any of Esau's men to yeah. hang with him. Right. Oh, no, no, you go on.
Yeah, that would have been a little awkward for them to be saying, why aren't we moving, sir? Yeah, I think it was intentional.
So how long did Esau wait before he started backtracking trying to find him? I mean, it never says...
I'm not sure we're ever told of that.
It seems like he would have said, so how long does it take?
Where are you?
Yeah. Where is he?
Yeah.
He's like, well, at least I got the flocks and herds.
Yeah. Good thing I took the herds, yeah.
He was kind of a pain in the neck anyway. So.
But I guess what we see here is just being guarded... That even when we're walking with the Lord, and here's a clear manifestation, God can solve the problem, but then he falls back to, this is what I've done before. And so just a reminder for all of us, be careful. You've got to be staying vigilant. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'll let you finish your talk.
No, yours will be a better idea.
just something alternate to think of. I don't know if something, he sensed something during that meeting that caused him to say, maybe this is this association is not, of, you know, it's the relationship between a believer and an unbeliever, almost, right, at this point. So
maybe he has some second thoughts even after the meeting.
In reconciliation, he's not still comfortable with further association. I don't know.
Yeah, so maybe that's part of what's driving it. But still, he wasn't honest about it and saying, I'm going to follow. But yes, maybe there was something there that gave him a sense that this isn't a good idea.
But one could also say, argue to that point, you don't want to anger or cause more rife at that particular point. You know, he's still got his 400 men. But at any time, you want them to, you know.
So that may be what he's thinking. I just let him go. Yeah.
Doesn't sound like he planned to go with him because when Esau offered to lead people, he said, there's no need.
Yeah. I think even by that time, he already had his plan. And I think it's significant. He crosses back over the river out of his territory. I don't see, I think that he's kind of getting, going back to trusting his skill rather than, you know, honoring the Lord in it.
And yet, he's building an altar.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of times we can look like we're doing the right thing and that we're, you know, serving the Lord, and yet the heart's not right.
Yep. You hear that? So in other words, the fact that he builds an altar, we can go through these motions of worship, and there's elements of sincerity in it, and yet still significant things that aren't quite where they're supposed to be with the Lord.
Is there significance to the name he gave in that place?
El is the name God, is God. Elohe is like Elohim in construct. So the God of... Elohe, what's the other word? Israel. Yeah, and so, and remember, that's his own name. So God is the God of Israel. Interestingly, by the way, this name change, when Abraham's name was changed from Abram to Abraham, you almost never see him called Abram again. I don't think at all. Isaac, there's no name change. But with Jacob... Throughout Genesis, it's about 50-50. He's sometimes called Jacob, sometimes Israel. So in other words,
He's still
disappointed. There, he's still got his tendencies.
Well, and God providentially kept him separate from Esau. Because he was the promise.
Yeah, going to Esau down is Esau's territory. Yeah. Yeah. I think that wouldn't have been a good situation. Yeah. Stopping in Shechem won't be a good situation. Well, some things, keep thinking, keep wrestling with this text. Don't forget to think about Galatians 1:1-5 also. But good thoughts.